Hi everyone, I'm Heidi Rogers, and this is Tell the Others. I wanted to create a place for meaningful conversation, life lessons, and parenting hacks. Sometimes I chat to interesting people, sometimes I answer questions about parenting or life stuff, and sometimes I just rant. These episodes are filled with stories and insights that made me say, ugh, I just have to tell the others. So let's dive in to hear what we can learn today. So many times I talk to adults about their childhood, and one of the things that comes up a lot is blame, shame, guilt from family dynamics when there is a sick kid in the family. So if this interests you and you want to learn more about it, if you look at family constellation work or family systems, there is research and theories into this, where often in a family, there will be the bad kid, the sick kid. There's like different roles that, yeah, you think it's unique to your family, but in actuality, it's a thing. But yeah, I have a few clients where we have been, so it's on my mind because we've been talking about this recently, about there being a sick kid in the family. And that could be that they had cancer when they were a child. There is a kid in the family who has mental health issues, you know, like they were suicidal or they had an eating disorder or they were depressed or anxious or bipolar or whatever. So there's this sick kid in the family. And what is so fascinating is, another client who was assaulted, and that then left her to be feeling depressed and anxious and PTSD and stuff from the assault. And what often happens is the other siblings feel resentful of your unwellness. And it's really complicated too. It's really, really complicated because it's like this whole kind of perfect storm sort of thing happens where I feel, this is what the siblings would say, I feel frustrated and angry at you, sibling, for being unwell and hogging so much of mom and dad's attention and time. Because remember, for our children, they view our gaze, our attention, our time as a marker, quantifier of your love, my worth and value to you. So if my parents feel connected to me and they love me and whatever, then I get their time. So with, say, a cancer example, and I've had this with several clients that I've worked with that had cancer, the dynamic that happens is one child goes to the hospital to be treated. One parent, usually mom, spends all the time with that child in hospital doing treatment. And then the other kids that are left at home get resentful that this kid is getting so much of mom's attention. So mom's now not here for me in the ways that I need. She's with the sick sibling. That pisses me off. And I think, fair enough, that makes sense. Your mom's not around. She's not able to meet your needs. It makes a lot of sense to me why that would piss you off. The problem is, if we're talking about kids or teenagers, they're having a normal, appropriate response, right? For a 10-year-old, a 14-year-old, or whatever. This client said to me the other day, but my brother and sister never came and visited me in the hospital. And I'm like, but how old were they when you were going through your treatment? And she said they were 10 and 13. And so in my mind, I'm like, well, of course they didn't come visit you in the hospital because they're 10 and 13. And that wouldn't cross their mind because they're 10 and 13. But the experience for her was my siblings didn't come and visit me in hospital. So, and she, because she was a teenager when it happened, that's how she locked it into her brain, was they were not there for me. They don't care about me. Not thinking at all about the fact that her mom was taken away basically from the other siblings because she was helping her in her treatments and stuff in hospital. So then what, fast forward, you know, 15 years from then, and what's the dynamic? The younger siblings hate her because, you know, she took mom away. None of this is conscious, of course. There's just this deep-seated resentment and anger towards her for taking mom away. And they'll say things like, I think mom loved you more. It still does. Also, so it's like nobody sees it from the other people's perspective. Nobody sees it from what that would have been like for mom having to be there for one kid and kind of neglecting the other. I mean, the other kids were definitely neglected in the traditional sense of mom not being around, mom not meeting their needs, mom not having capacity. You know, if one of the other kids is crying or upset, it was just like, oh my God, can you just sort it out? I've been in hospital all day with your sister getting chemo, where she just had another surgery or whatever, right? So no one sees mom in her context. No one sees older sister in her context of she's a teenager and battling cancer. And no one sees it from each of the other kids who are left at home and stuck with dad, who's not emotionally responsive and not talking to them about what's happening and not able to meet their emotional needs, right? So what happens? Then you fast forward, then there's just all this anger and resentment from everyone. You weren't there for me, right? Think about it. Everyone's saying the same song. You weren't there for me. You didn't meet my needs. I'm resentful and angry towards you for that. And everyone is sort of looking at each other saying the exact same thing. And essentially what they're saying is, you're not good enough. You didn't do sisterhood, brotherhood, motherhood, whatever. You didn't do it right. You're not good enough. And it's so fascinating to me because everyone has the same complaint. Everyone thinks they're right. And everyone is looking at each other the same way. And it's so fascinating to me how, you know, something like that, you would think, oh, well, she survived. She's well, she's, you know, 15 years in remission or whatever. So great. And you'd think that they would have really close relationships. So often I see this where a child has a trauma or is unwell, mental health, physical health, whatever. And it explodes the family. It is like a grenade. It just fractures and shatters relationships and dynamics. And the reason why I'm telling you guys all of this is because I don't want that for you guys. I want you to know what this looks like when, you know, your kid grows up and is in their 30s, and then what their relationships are like with their siblings, for you to see like that this is a possibility of, like, this is a way that this can end up. And I don't want that for you. I want to explain this to you, so you have, I guess, a bit more conscious awareness and can have some more conscious choice about how you navigate the sick kid dynamic, if that's happening. And usually it will happen in every family that there's one kid that's maybe the more behavioral challenging kid, even if it's just asthma and eczema, or, you know, gut issues or whatever, there's always going to be the one kid that has more trouble than, you know, problems than the other. And it just creates an interesting dynamic. So what if I had met this family when they were, you know, now they're all in their 20s and 30s. If I had met them when they were teenagers and young kids going through this, what I would have said to them is, the young kids who were left at home and felt neglected and abandoned by mom, I would have said to them, so you're mad at your sister for being unwell. Makes sense. Kind of angry that she has cancer. That makes sense. You hate her for that because she gets a lot of attention from mom, doesn't she? She gets a lot of one-on-one time with mom, doesn't she? And mom's not there for you in the ways that you need, huh? That makes sense. But then I think what might happen is, and I've said this to kids that I've, and adults that I've worked with, when we've processed that, what that experience is like to be the well kid with the sick sibling. What I go on to say is, but it also would have made you feel a bit guilty and a bit shamey, huh? Because you knew, even if you were 10 or 13, you knew that she didn't pick to get cancer. She didn't want to be sick. But it was really complicated for you, wasn't it? You knew that she didn't pick this. So I feel mad at her for being unwell. But then I feel shame for thinking that. So then I feel bad within myself, and that I'm a bad brother, I'm a bad sister, I'm a bad person How could I be angry and resentful towards someone who has cancer? Ugh, I am just a disgusting person. So then what do we know from shame, right? Disconnection, isolation, withdrawal, armored, walls go up. The parents would not have been saying to those kids, you are allowed to hate your sister. That makes so much sense. You are allowed to hate me for not being here for you. You feel rejected and abandoned, don't you? You feel like your sister matters more. I get that. That makes sense. I'm going to try to do my best and, you know, clone myself and split myself in 100 ways so that I can be there for you more and meet your needs. And I'm going to really try. Tell me more. Tell me how this makes you feel. What does it feel like when I spend the night at the hospital? What does it feel like when I'm up all night with her in her room? What does it feel like when I can't drop you off or pick you up at school because I'm in hospital with your sister, or because I've been up all night with her and so I'm sleeping during the day and stuff? What does that feel like for you? Makes me angry. It makes me sad. Mm-hmm. That makes sense. Makes me angry and sad too, that this is what it's like and this is like how it has to be. Do you see what I mean? So it's like what usually happens though, one, those conversations never happen. Because I think, understandably, the parents are in survival mode. The parents are freaking out that their kid is, you know, dying or in hospital or whatever. They're in fight flight themselves. So there's no judgment on parents not handling this the, you know, textbook way or what Heidi said you should do. No, none of us handle, where do you get the manual of like, oh my God, your kid's in hospital. Here's what you do. Here's how, like, nobody gets that conversation. So I think we're all doing the best we can. And but the kids don't get that validation. They don't get that conversation even because no one sees them. They're kind of the blind kid in the family. Like they're not seen. They're not heard because the spotlight is on the other kid, on the sick kid. They get the attention. They get the neighbors, the principal saying to the siblings, how's your sister doing? How is her cancer? I heard she relapsed. I heard she's back in hospital. I heard the surgery. Like you have those kinds of questions and comments always coming at the healthy kid, and the sick kid never knows any of that's going on because they're too busy surviving and they're in and out of hospital and treatments and whatever. And they don't realize that the siblings are getting all of this ignoring basically and minimal acknowledgement for their experience. It's all about the sick kid. So you can see, right, how the siblings get to this point of anger and resentment and frustration with the sick kid because, and it's so complex too, because we're talking about kids, right? But really complex feelings at a time where you really need your parents' presence, attunement. I want them to see me. I want them to hear me. And none of that's happening because they are so preoccupied with the kid who's unwell. You can see how that would breed such anger and resentment, right? Because none of my needs are getting met. And then I'm not even allowed to say that out loud. I feel like an asshole if I say, I hate my sister for having cancer. Oh, you know, like, oh my God, you can't say that. But that's what they're all thinking. And then that makes me feel guilty for having those thoughts. I feel bad. I feel dirty. I feel unlovable. Ugh. How could I have that thought? But it's how I feel. Mom is not there for me. Sister's getting all of the attention. I hate her for that. Oh, I shouldn't think that. I'm a bad person. Shove it down, shove it down, shove it down. And then there's also, I think what also would happen is if a child ever did disclose that to a parent, they'd be met with shame. How could you say that about your sister? She didn't pick this. How could you say that to me as your mother? I'm doing the best I can. This is hard, splitting my time between the hospital and you guys. And I'm trying to do the best. And, you know, like, it's such a lose-lose. It's just everyone loses. It's such a shitty situation. It's so hard to navigate. And again, we're talking about kids who don't have fully developed cortexes, right? So the ability to logic, consequence, planning, emotional regulation, understanding, reasoning, all that stuff they're not really there. But then what the other thing we know about trauma is you will often be stunted emotionally wherever you are in your development where the trauma occurs. So for example, if your mom dies when you're 8, you will be more likely to be at an 8-year-old emotional level with, say, dealing with disappointment or frustration, the way that you respond, your default setting. And then of course this is changeable and like you can learn how to regulate and you can learn blah, 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 blah. But it's like your default setting will get you stuck to that 8-year-old kind of response. So like with clients that I've had where, say there's been fighting in the marriage and they'll say something like, and when we're fighting, he just gets so juvenile, like the jokes that he makes or the ways that he fights back, it's so juvenile and just so immature, the way that he fights, or like the, you know, I'll say something and he'll go, okay. And he'll just do this really like not adult-like talking it out and working through it kind of behaviors. And I'll go, how old was he again when his dad died? Or how old was he again when his brother, you know, went into hospital? Oh, he was 13. Well, that makes sense. He's having a 13-year-old kind of behavior of going, okay, you know, or fighting like a 13-year-old. And it's just important, I guess, for us to know that if you had a trauma occur in your childhood, which, hello, most of us did, that will probably be your default setting of how you do life, how you manage stress, how you respond to conflict. You know, if you grew up in a home where anger wasn't allowed, and so you suppressed all of your angry feelings, then it makes a lot of sense that when you get into a situation of conflict in your 40s, that you will go back to and deviate, you know, back to your default setting. So back to the family with the sick kid. So then what happens is the siblings who are left at home have this weird anger resentment thing with the sibling who's sick, but it's also heavily mixed and you know, like when you mix Play-Doh colors together, how like you get that weird purpley brown kind of color, it gets like that. That's what it feels like to me, is it's like you take, you know, all the separate colors, all the separate feelings, and then you mush it up and it's this purpley brown, because I feel guilt and shame that I am jealous of my sister having attention. I feel guilt and shame over having needs and wanting my mom to be around more. I feel jealous that people are always asking me about my sister and they're never asking me about me. I feel like she has more worth and value because people are always asking about her and everyone's always worried. Do you see what I mean? And it's so complex because as an adult, those are really complex emotions and complex emotional landscape. But let alone for a 10-year-old, a 7-year-old, a 15-year-old, an 18-year-old. But then everyone sort of takes a snapshot and freezes in that moment how everyone's role and how everyone is. And nobody ever updates the tapes. Nobody ever upgrades the system to go, oh, you're 35 now. You're different than the 12-year-old. It's like we keep them locked in their behavior or their attitudes or how they treated us or whatever. We just keep them locked as 12-year-old you, you know? I'm thinking too of another family I worked with where there was the older teenager had depression and the younger brother felt a, you kind of hijacked, you took away my teenagehood because mom and dad, I can think of like 11 clients off the top of my head that this was the story. Or like older sister got diagnosed with bipolar and borderline, and she was a whole situation, and mom and dad were just so preoccupied with her that when I was having a hard time through my teenage years, they weren't there because they were dealing with her and her stuff. And then I feel this weird anger and resentment towards her for hijacking my teenage years. And I hate mom and dad for that. I hate her for that. But this is, again, all unconscious. And what most people would say is, I just I have a lot of resentment towards my brother or my sister, and I don't know why. And she's just so annoying, or she's so controlling, or she's so whatever. And it's never like an updated, it's never an updated tape. So with this client the other day, the one who had cancer in high school, we spoke about, you know, what obviously validated and listened in her experience, you know, but her, one of her goals is to repair the relationships and the family and bring everyone together. But she's like, I can't get forward because my sister just hates me so much. And so I said, I wonder what it would be like if between now and next time I see you, you think about what it was like for her to be 10, 11, 12, 13. I can't remember how old she was when you were in hospital and when you were going through this stuff. Just think about it and what that would, because now that she's in her 30s, it's, you know, she has a different perspective. She doesn't have kids, but she's a different perspective on it, obviously, now. And she's like, yeah, I've never thought about that. And I was like, well, yeah, because you were a kid. You were just trying to survive. Of course you've not thought about it. Like, don't hate yourself for that. Of course, none of us think about this crap until someone like me puts it in your head to think about. And this is going to be the beginning of the healing, right? Is that all those people, if we were all sitting around in a circle, you know how I said everyone's thinking the same thing, is starting to see that from other people's perspective. So get sort of like getting up and switching chairs and seeing it from everyone's perspective is where you would start. And the biggest place of where you would start is compassion. Right? Because what's the antidote to anger? Compassion. And so it would look like each kid saying to each other, I never really saw it from your perspective. I only saw it from mine. And I only saw it from my place of the needs that were not being met and that you weren't there for me in the ways that I needed. And mom and dad weren't there for me in the ways that I needed. I'm sorry. I was a kid. And I'm sorry I couldn't see it from your perspective at the time. I was so in my own shit that I just could not see anything beyond what I was going through. And I want to heal this with you. And I know the only way for us to heal that is through compassion. And so I have compassion on you. I have compassion on me, you know, 17-year-old me, 15-year-old me, 14-year-old me, whatever that is, that we were just kids. And I forgive you. I forgive me. And like, we all kind of go around and say, I forgive mom and dad. Because dude, everyone's doing their best, you know? And hindsight is 2020, obviously, but like, not fair, you know, because we can only look at that stuff now. And I think too, just a big part of this is like acknowledging, because that's hard to acknowledge. I hated my sister for being unwell. I hated my sister for taking this attention off of me. But I see now she didn't pick this. Or even if she did, even if she got herself into a situation that you could say is like, oh, you know, she's the drug addict, it's her fault, you know, whatever. Like, still, addiction is a trauma response. Addiction is, it's all goes back to something happened to me to make me do this or make me be this way. You don't just, you know, come out like that. So it's all an adaptive response. It's all a trauma response. Just on that, the Wisdom of Trauma documentary, it's about an hour and 15 minutes long. Highly recommend. Gabor Mate, I don't know if I'm pronouncing his name right, a trauma guru, addiction guru, parenting kind of specialist, doctor, dude in the States, has this documentary called The Wisdom of Trauma. They release it for small amounts of time. So you can only watch it for like 4 days or something, which is, I think, today until August 1st or something. You just Google Gabor Mate, Wisdom of Trauma. It'll come up and it's free or donation only, and you have access to it and you just watch it online. Awesome. Awesome, awesome, awesome. It will explain a lot of trauma stuff to you. It will explain a lot of why you are the way you are. It'll give you a lot of insight in addiction and why people do quote unquote stupid things, make stupid choices. It will help give you a lot of compassion because you'll understand why people do those things and that it's actually just an adaptive response and trying to survive. But yeah, it is a real opportunity, I think, for families to have this conversation about the sick kid. And so maybe you listening to this today will make you reflect on which one you were in your family, how that felt for you, what that stirred up in you. Do you want to have some compassion for your siblings, for yourself, for your parents? Are there some conversations you want to have? Some repair that you want to have, maybe? Forgiveness? And sometimes I think with this stuff, it's just the awareness of going, holy shit, I did not realize that that was the dynamic at play. And for some people, it takes a lot of therapy that even listening to this, you might go, no, that's not me. That's not our situation. You might need some therapy or some book reading to kind of dig down deeper. Because oftentimes we push the stuff so far down because it's so intolerable. One, for me to think of myself like that I hated my sister for cancer, you know, because that's just abhorrent. I couldn't imagine. You know, no, I hate her for other reasons. But a lot of times it's just really unconscious. I hated her for being unwell. And it's like, it's okay to say that. And then if you're the hated one, to understand, to try to understand why, and that it makes sense. And that if it was reversed, maybe you wouldn't have responded like that, but you don't know. So I guess that's why we just meet it with compassion. Because if that was your perception in our childhood, was that our parents loved me more because I was sick or whatever, having compassion that is their experience. Question, Heidi, how do adults sort out these dynamics after the sickness is over? Is it ever too late to address this? Never too late. Never too late. Dude, someone could apologize to me for something that happened when we were 12, and I would be grateful for the apology. If you think of all the people who you've ever felt wronged by, or that they did the wrong thing, or they hurt your feelings. I mean, if they knocked on your door or sent you an email saying, I'm sorry, and taking responsibility and ownership, would you delete it or turn them away? Nah, it's always nice to hear apology, and it's always nice to hear acknowledgement. Because that's what a lot of people will say to me, is it's the acknowledgement. I just want you to acknowledge you did it wrong. I just want you to acknowledge blank. It's just that responsibility. Just own it, man. Just say, I was a crap dad. I got mad at you guys so much. And I see now I shouldn't have yelled at you guys like that when you guys were little. Like, I have so many clients where when they've had those conversations with their parents, it's like massive tears. It's a huge session. Because it's like, my dad finally said the things I was wanting him to say my whole life. Just the acknowledgement. So yes, definitely say something. If the sickness is over, the dynamics would still be at play, because that shit is lifelong, unless it's addressed and we talk about it. So for some people, that can mean writing a letter to each family member. For some people, that means doing family therapy. For some people, that means us all sitting down and talking about it. But you have to remember too, that you're at a different place in your healing and in your journey, right? So like, let's say the rest of your family, this family, I'm thinking about the one who had cancer in high school. No, nobody in her family has done therapy that she knows of. Everyone's just shoved it right down. No emotional awareness, no self-reflection. It's all just, who needs emotions? Shove them down. So if she were to sit them all down and go, hey, you guys, I was reflecting upon childhood and my cancer, and, you know, I forgive you for everything that happened. And I can see now how hard that must have been for yourself. Pretty good chance that she's going to be really disappointed in that family session, that they're not going to want to hear what she has to say. They're going to think she's being manipulative. You know, I've had many, many experiences where that just does not unfold how you think it will and how the fantasy plays. But sometimes it's just, I do this work with myself and I give them compassion and send them loving energy in my heart. And I just think about forgiving, you know, 11-year-old them. And I do that work just myself, you know, depending on how strained and how tough the relationship is, or just sort of releasing the expectation that I'm going to just release you and say, hey, I know you weren't able to be there for me in the ways that I needed when I was a kid. I don't hold you responsible for that. I can see now that you were a kid. You were 11, you were 18, you were whatever. And I'm sorry that if I ever made you feel that you were doing the brother or the sister role wrong, you were a kid and it must've been really hard for you. And so I just want to acknowledge that. And yeah, just that, just want to acknowledge that. So it might be more of a, I'm not expecting for them to get it. I'm not expecting for them to say whatever the magical thing is that you want to hear, which is like, thank you so much for saying that. Oh, yes, I have felt like a horrible brother. Thank you. That's in the movies. Sometimes you get lucky and you get someone who's on the same page, but everyone's on their own path, you know? So it's like, you don't know how self-aware, how they might not be able to receive it. That's another thing that sometimes people, that doesn't fit. I think I'm a horrible person. So you saying all that, I can't compute that. I can't accept it. Receiving is a thing. So I would just, if it was me, I would probably do a letter. I think because I would want them to reread it and let it kind of sink in. And a lot of times in these relationships, there's so much damage that's been done, right? It's so fractured that it's hard to even just get a phone call together or to have even the time and space to have these kinds of conversations, you know? It might be hard to actually have a physical conversation. It might be a letter. But I think the thing is too, you got to go into it with low expectations and being really clear on your motives. Really clear on your motives. Because we also don't want to do the I'm holier than thou. I've done therapy. I've sorted all my problems out. I'm perfect. You don't want to go into it like that. I think it's more just an acknowledgement of, I've been thinking about the dynamics from our childhood or our, you know, teenage years. And I see that there was this dynamic there. I'd never really been aware of that. And I just wanted to acknowledge that and just say, I see you now. And I didn't see you then. And I'm sorry I didn't see you then, but I had my own shit going on and I didn't have capacity to see you. And I just wanted you to know that you did nothing wrong. You did nothing wrong. You were doing your best. I was doing my best. Mom and dad were doing their best. We were all winging it. I'm sorry that happened. I wish that hadn't happened, but it did. Kind of period. Not, I need you to say something. I need you to appreciate me saying this. I need you to thank me. I need you to, no. Because then you're setting yourself up for disappointment because you can't guarantee that they're going to give a shit. Still, I've seen this scenario where people will say that and then the sibling will come back with, you're so manipulative. So it's like, you can't win sometimes. So that's why I think the whole motive and the purpose is for me to speak my truth, to feel clear that I've told you how I felt. I've apologized for the situation, my responsibility in it, my part in it. I'm having compassion on you now rather than anger and resentment. And also, I guess I want to normalize this. That's a purpose for me of why I wanted to have this conversation, was to normalize that this is a thing. Your family's not weird. Your family's very normal. That this is a really common dynamic we see in families where there's a sick kid or a troubled kid, you know, the kid who gets in trouble all the time or the one who's always, you know, in timeout or in the principal's office, you know, then it often is confusing and hard for the other kids. Because remember, you know, like what I always say about connection and like one-on-one time is like, that's the currency. That's how kids rate and scale and put like a value on their value and their worth to you. So it's whoever gets the most one-on-one time with mom or dad, that kid has the most worth and value. So even if it's because I'm taking your brother to speech therapy or he's on the spectrum and so he needs to go to a social skills class or he has a hard time with frustration tolerance and so your dad and I have to spend an extra 20 minutes with him over any kind of transition, the other kids will just clock it that, well, they love. And I've had adults say this to me in their 40s, 50s, 60s, who will say, I know how crazy this sounds, but it always felt like, operative word felt, it always felt like my parents loved him more or loved her more. One of the beautiful things, though, that can happen when people become parents themselves is they then realize, oh, that's not what was happening at all. Mom and dad were just trying to survive. The reason why they spent so much time and attention and effort on brother or sister is because they were having a hard time. Not always, but a lot of times when people become parents themselves, they realize how hard it must have been for their parents to juggle that kind of dynamic. Again, compassion. It enables you to have compassion, you know? I think there's a lot of guilt and shame too that the sick kid will carry, because I've had those clients, obviously, where they'll feel bad that mom and dad spent so much time attending therapy sessions with them or driving them to hospital for treatments or surgery recovery, whatever. They'll feel really guilty and shamey that I'm screwed up or I, you know, had all these issues and it's all my fault. I, you know, imploded our family or whatever. And that's a big piece of compassion work too, you know, and having compassion for myself and little me or 17-year-old me or 20-year-old me or whatever, that I went through stuff and I did my best and it was hard. And of course I didn't pick this. Why would I pick this? Even if it's a drug addiction or, you know, something like a situation you got yourself into, that kind of thing that you might hear people say. They were a kid. You guys know, like, because I go on and on about the cortex and not having a fully developed cortex and making good decisions. That's what sucks, is that it's super common to make a lot of really stupid choices when you're a teenager or a young person, you know, under 15 or whatever. Because you don't have a cortex. You don't have the ability to forward plan, consequence reasoning. What's going to happen if I have sex? What's going to happen if I drive this fast? What's going to happen if I, you know, I was watching a documentary last night on lifers in prison. And I have a real heart for the prison community. Because I feel like they're all the quote unquote bad kids. They're the naughty kids and nobody understands them. And they're just chock full of trauma. And this guy who was 14 at the time, this is also in California, which has the harshest incarceration rates and stupid laws. He's 14 at the time. His friend says, I'm going to kill my parents. And he goes over to his friend's house to pick him up to get him out of there because he'd had a fight and they were abusive or something. And so he thinks he's going over there to help his friend get him in the car and drive away. And he gets there and his friend is like, oh my God, I did it. You know, can you help me hide the bodies, basically? So he's 14 and is like, oh, okay. Never been in trouble, you know, straight A kid, just like trying to help his friend, and helps him do that. And what does he get? Life in prison without the possibility of parole. Or they call it toe tag parole, because that's the only way that you will leave is with a toe tag. And he's reflecting in the interview of like, I was 14. I didn't even do it, but I was there. And yeah, I should have told the cops. I should have not, you know, I shouldn't have helped him. But I was 14 and I was trying to be a good friend and I wasn't thinking. And it's like, oh, and seeing, and he's now, you know, this was like 15 years ago or something. So he's, you know, what would that make him, like 30 or something? And now he has a fully developed cortex. And just seeing him reflect on it of like, I didn't realize what a stupid mistake I was making. And, you know, literally my whole life will now be in prison. There's so many things. Don't even get me started on prison reform. Because having worked in prison before in my early 20s, it's such a criminal factory. They just leave worse. They're not rehabilitative. There's no rehabilitation. Anyway, I won't get started. But what it was like reminding me of, and talking to so many of the guys in the interviews that they were talking to, had stories like this where they were young and dumb and they made stupid choices, or they were present when someone was killed or whatever. And but it's like, that's a, just what you would expect when you're under 25 is making dumb choices. Anyway, and he was then sharing about how that blew up his family, basically, for him to go away to prison at 14, and how that impacted his siblings and his parents and the shame and the guilt and the blah, 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 blah. And one of the consequences being that then the resentment and the anger from his siblings of, you were so selfish in this stupid moment, because then you like ruined my life because then mom and dad are all upset and blah, blah, blah. So why am I telling you all that? I feel like the only way through this stuff is forgiveness and compassion, because what's the alternative? Bitterness, anger, resentment, suffering. The thing that happened sucked. The bad thing I did, the bad thing they did, the sickness, the illness, the divorce, the whatever the thing is that was crap that hit our family. Either we sit with bitterness, anger, resentment at everyone, or we sit with forgiveness and compassion and seeing each other as human. And being human means sucking and making mistakes and getting it wrong. Or we choose love and healing and humanness, and that we're imperfect, you know? And I think sometimes with the sick kid dynamic in families, we forget to see each other. So the summary, I guess I would say, is we forget to see each other in our humanness. Everyone in my family was doing their best. Was it good enough? Probably not. But was it their best at the time with the information that they had? Yeah. And if we can have compassion, that is healing. Just makes it easier to get through life, I think, if you can have compassion on yourself and on others, but especially in your family, because as much as we want to be disconnected from our family, if they suck or they hurt us, it's really hard to cut that cord and to disconnect from family, because we're hardwired to want them in our lives. It's a primal response. It's a physiological chip that's in us, of caring what our parents think, caring what our siblings think, wanting their approval, wanting them to be proud of us, wanting them to like us. Like, it's hardwired into us, you know?
If you're a parent or a professional who works with children and you want my help in improving things with the kiddos in your life, or if you're simply a human being feeling kind of stuck and maybe kind of overwhelmed, my online programs have lots of resources, transformative content, one-on-one coaching, group coaching, and a supportive community. If you want to learn more, just go to HeidiRogers.com. All right, friends, thank you as always for tuning in today. Our time is our most precious asset, so I truly appreciate you sharing your time with me. I'll see you right back here for the next episode of Tell the Others.